X1580 AM Columbus, W224 EG Madison, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Darielle Olbing. Our opening statements are set for Monday in Donald Trump's New York hush money trial.
What's happening here with the judicial system is an outrage, and all over the world they're watching it, and all over the world they're seeing it. This is a giant witch hunt.
The former president, outside court, he's pleaded not guilty to 34 counts of falsifying business records to suppress stories about hush money payments that were made to adult film star Stormy Daniels. A Florida man is in a New York City hospital in critical condition after setting himself on fire in a park across the street from the courthouse where Mr. Trump's trial is being held. A third far-right Republicans joined an effort to remove Mike Johnson as speaker. Kentucky Congressman Thomas Massie says more will soon be on board.
We're picking up steam on the motion to vacate.
They claim Johnson is pushing through a package which includes funding for Ukraine, but nothing for border security. They're angry about it. This is ABC News.
Civic Media News. I'm Terry Bell. Here's what Wisconsin needs to know. Governor Evers will be able to participate in a lawsuit seeking to reverse the Wisconsin Supreme Court's two-year-old ban on absentee ballot drop boxes. The case could make a big difference in Wisconsin's elections this year. The court's four liberal justices granted Evers' motion to intervene Thursday. Fewer Wisconsin voters say undocumented immigrants working in the United States should be able to stay and apply for citizenship. 49% today compared to 67% 4 years ago.
The political rhetoric has changed this year with Donald Trump's simple statement that he would like to deport all immigrants in the U.S. illegally. And he's talked extensively about that.
Marquette University Law School poll director Charles Franklin. And that's what you need to know. I'm Terry Bell, Civic Media News.
Family Talk with Straight Talk.
You give and you give.
It's time to get with Straight Talk Wireless. You get a reliable 5G network and unlimited data, and you get to choose who joins your family plan starting as low as $25 a line.
Does it have to be family?
It can be family or people you like.
Get more lines and more savings. Switch to Straight Talk for family plans starting as low as $25 a line per month for 4 lines. Find us at Walmart and StraightTalk.com. For network management practices, visit StraightTalk.com. Family plan discount with 4 lines all on the Silver Unlimited plan. Taxes and fees apply.
Mad Radio 92.7 FM, home of the John and Gordy Show.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
It's time for the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is the voice of the working class, Rick Smith.
And welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks so much for being here. Today on the big program, lots to get to, lots to talk about. I had a friend today tell me he's retiring. Finally has come to the age where can't work anymore. Your body's breaking down, tired, and is going, hey, going to retire. I'm going to enjoy my golden years, going to play with the grandkids, going to mutter around the house, going to do those things. And good for him, has a union pension, has some money saved. One of the fortunate ones of the silver tsunami is what they're calling it, as the boomer generation, they're moving along. And what's interesting is that, you know, I asked him, I said, hey, are you planning on doing any work? Are you going to, because there are some guys who, you know, they'll work, you know, a day or two a week, just to make ends meet or just to not be bored. I knew one guy who, you know, he worked until his late 70s, early, I think he was almost 80, driving a truck because, you know, he's like, I don't want to retire because if I do, I'll die. And there's that mentality. I think there's a lot more to it, but we won't get into that. But, you know, there's this thing where, you know, right now we're in the middle of this, what they're calling the silver tsunami of the baby boomers, who, you know, 73 million people strong since 2010 have been retiring at a rate of 10,000 per day and now picking up to about 11,000 a day because we're hitting peak 65. The silver tsunami is here. In fact, 2024, they say we're going to see a record of 4.1 million baby boomers hitting that traditional retirement age. Now, does that mean they're going to retire? No, I don't think so. I saw this thing over at the Bureau of Labor Statistics that their projection is that people over 65, they're going to continue to rise in labor force participation over the next decade because, well, one, the people with the baby boomers who retired early, the older boomers, they're probably running out of money. And two, the younger boomers, well, they didn't have a lot of it. And what I find interesting, again, the number of older people in the workforce is, what I think it was Pew Research's report back in 23 found that 62% of older Americans still in the workforce full time, up from 47% in 1987. So you have this growing group of people who are saying, well, either I don't want to or they can't. You've got a growing number of people saying they're never going to be able to retire. And like I said, some never want to, and I get that. But I fear the majority aren't going to be able to. Won't going to be able to. Understand, this is a luxury that we have at this generation. Because, you know, before Social Security, there was no retirement for working people. Men over that age, 75% of them worked, and they didn't live that long. So the only people who really got to retire were the very wealthy people. So here we are. Peak 65, the silver tsunami, and a study by the folks at ALI Retirement Income Institute, they point out that one in four workers who are nearing retirement age don't have a dime. In fact, not even a penny to save. One in four, nothing. They say that 53% of peak boomers are the ones at the tail end of the generation who are going to turn 65 this year. And through 2030, they're going to have less than $250,000 in assets, which I got to tell you, I don't know how you live on that. Not quite sure. But you look at some of the numbers, you know, the better educated workers, they did well. The lower educated workers, not so much. Union workers did well because they had defined benefit pensions, like my friend. And what these reports and these studies, and we've seen a bunch of them, people retiring, especially the boomer folk, they're not going to be able to retire at their standard of living. What the study said is the younger boomers who rely on Social Security benefits are going to do so by the time they're 70. 90% of their retirement income is going to come from Social Security. Now, understand, Social Security was only to replace 40%. There was supposed to be a three-legged stool. Maybe you've heard this. There was Social Security, defined benefit pension, and your savings. And if you remember, during the Reagan era, and thank you, Ronald Reagan, for selling us on this idea of, no, you don't need those dirty union pensions. You can be a millionaire and get one of these 401ks. And the idea was, and how they sold it, yes, you'll have your union pension, and yes, you'll have strong Social Security, but you can invest in this magic, in this wonderful magic thing that's going to make everyone a millionaire. I remember when I started a job back in early 90s, they said, you stay here 30 years, you're going to have $1 million. And I remember saying back then, there's no way they're going to let a dumb truck driver have $1 million. And I'm nowhere near $1 million. And understand, if they don't do something about Social Security, guess what? Yeah, what you're going to see is a cut in benefits because the trust fund is supposed to be depleted by 2033. So you could see benefit cuts to people who are already struggling. And now what I find interesting is, you know, the report that I read said, you know, this will give Gen X, my generation, the millennials and younger workers, the ability to fill those vacant jobs. We go, there are going to be no vacant jobs. Especially when you say that, you know, only 4 in 10 Americans have enough money to retire on, according to this New York Wealth Watch. And I don't even know that it's that high. And so what you've got is a scenario where you're not going to be able to retire when you get older. You're going to have to keep working. You know, and according to a 2024 study from the Pew Research Center, the typical 65 plus worker makes about $22 an hour, which is about $3 an hour less than the younger folks working doing the same job. Cheap labor, anyone? Because understand, corporate America needs cheap labor. So you got to give the right credit. They knew by destroying Social Security, they could make the older generation just as desperate as the younger generation, if not more so, and you could get them to work for cheap labor. Now, the other part of this that's amazing to me is not only are we, you know, going after destroying Social Security and Medicare and all of that, oh no, we're going after the young people, because I'm sure you've seen Louisiana. They have voted to remove lunch breaks for child workers and cut unemployment benefits. On Thursday, they voted to repeal a law that would require employers to give lunch to child workers, because they're young. They got a lot of energy. They can work right through lunch, and also cut their unemployment benefits. Because again, what we need is we need cheap labor. So think about what they've accomplished. We're going after the kids. We're going to make child labor great again. And we're going after granny, because you know granny, she shouldn't be sitting home knitting sweaters. She should be out there doing labor. What about you? Are you closing in on retirement age? Do you have enough saved? Do you have the ability to go, I'd like to quit working. I would like to have an opportunity to spend some golden years, doing something that I want to do for a change. Or I look at what's coming. The Republicans still want to destroy Social Security. They still want to privatize and profitize that one thing that gave American workers an opportunity to dream of the possibility of a retirement. Quite remarkable. It's just amazing that they're even still a party that anyone would be willing, any working person would be willing to vote for. But I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@therickSmithShow.com. Got to take a quick break. Right back after this. Stick around.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors, the American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So, Monday, April 24th marks the one-year anniversary since Amazon drivers in Palmdale, California, united to fight for better wages, hours, conditions, treatment, dignity, respect, all of that stuff, attempting to realize their true power, especially coming out of the pandemic when we were told we were essential and frontline heroes and critical and all of that. Well, they're taking this power, and on the one-year anniversary, which is April 24th, they will be commemorating that event by taking to the picket line. This time, they're going to be at the NLRB Region 31 office in Los Angeles, and here to share some thoughts on why taking it to the NLRB. I've asked Randy Corrigan to come talk with us. Randy is the Secretary, Treasurer, Principal Officer of Teamsters Local 1932. Teamsters1932.org, the website, if you want to take a look at that. Randy, thanks for taking time for us.
Hey, no problem, Rick. Anytime.
So let's start with the one-year anniversary. I mean, this is we've had some Palmdale workers on the show over the last year. Let's start with that. What's been going on over this last year? I know there's been some events. Tell me how this got started and what the last year has been like.
Well, what the workers have done in the last year since demanding that Amazon recognize their right to bargain in addition to Amazon being held accountable for the business model in which they've created to try to separate themselves from the drivers and the driver network. What's happened in the last year is more than 40 extensions of picket lines have landed on more than 40 locations in almost a dozen states across the country. What those workers have done is taken direct action, landed in these facilities, you know, landed in front of these facilities, asked for other workers to support them in that direct action. And surprisingly so, hundreds and hundreds of workers, thousands of workers actually have walked off the job in support of their action. What they're doing is taking it directly to Amazon. They're not just waiting around for the NLRB to make a decision. And what they've done over the last year is continually push and press and make sure that Amazon understands that they're not going away quietly. Amazon would like to do what a lot of corporations do, which is just sweep it under the rug, allow a bunch of time to go by so that everybody moves on, and then they just kind of get away with whatever they get away with, regardless of what the decision may be later on down the road. Yeah. What you're seeing next Wednesday, the 24th, is those very same workers taking direct action at the board itself and actually holding them accountable. Matter of fact, just yesterday, they went to the board and a delegation of drivers went in to the Region 31 office, asked to speak to somebody and, you know, challenged them to explain why it's taking so long to just simply rule on a joint employer issue. A joint employer issue has been well established on what the criteria is to hold Amazon or any corporation accountable as a joint employer or a single employer that's controlling the subcontractor to an extreme degree.
Thanks for pointing out Wednesday, April 24th, not Monday. I want to make sure that our LA crowd knows it's Wednesday, April 24th. I don't know why I said Monday. But, you know, I get, you know, taking it to Amazon. I get organizing at the workplace. Some will question why go to the NLRB? What's the push there? I know you said that you got an ask for them, but, you know, why'd you choose this for that anniversary?
Well, anybody who's been around a long time knows that the NLRB takes a long time to issue a decision, and maybe it takes them 2, 3, 4 years to issue a decision, and maybe the decision's great. You recently heard of the CMEX decision, right? Everybody's talking about how great the CMEX decision is, but you're talking 3 years after the situation happened, and you're talking a complete turnover in a workforce afterwards. What has to happen is the NLRB needs to be held accountable to a degree where they realize the time in which they're dragging and the slow approach to dealing with the subject and issuing decisions, especially on things this important, affects real lives. You know, the people that work at the NLRB, they all continue to get paid. The attorneys that are arguing the cases, they're all getting paid. Amazon, you know, or any corporation is still getting paid. And quite frankly, even the union officials are getting paid. And for me, it's always been frustrating to watch workers get kind of pushed to the wayside, and then everybody's just kind of waiting for that legal process to conclude. Well, that's exactly what corporations want. They want it like that. And to see workers in this day and age that have taken direct action more than 40 times over the last year, and to commemorate the anniversary of them getting their contract, they're taking it right to the authority, the government authority, that is supposed to be protecting workers. And yes, you know, the new general counsel, she's been great, and there's been a lot of good decisions. But the problem with that comes that it takes them too long to issue these decisions. And workers get discouraged and they move on from time to time. These workers haven't. These workers are staying engaged and taking direct action and essentially calling out the National Labor Relations Board, saying it's time for you to speed up your process.
No, look, I've been very happy with Jennifer Abruzzo at the NLRB and the decisions that have come down. But you're right, it can take time. I've seen things speed up. The election process in a number of cases that I've seen have been really great as far as I'm concerned lately. But what do you say to the argument that, you know, they just don't have the people, the manpower, the funding, or is that a cop out?
Well, I think some of it has value. There's no doubt that part of that has value. But the problem with it is it's not just a funding issue. It's also a priority issue. I'll give you an example. Some of the policy issues that everybody argues about are their board charges hanging on. I get it. If those drag a little bit, that's a policy. But when you're talking workers that are directly impacted, their employment is directly impacted, or they're terminated, those should be put to the forefront, and all the resources of an organization should go into the front and deal with those cases first, primarily. And quite frankly, if a region, you know, because obviously the NLRB is broken down into regional bodies, and if a region is a little slow to get things done, well, figure out a way to take resources from another region and help speed it up a bit. And part of it is a cop-out. Part of it is true. They have to figure out a way to solve this problem. It doesn't take 9-10 months to solve a joint employer issue.
No, it shouldn't. It does not. It shouldn't. But here's the thing, and you brought up, you know, the most severe cases, people being fired and their jobs being put at risk. And, you know, I've been saying for the longest time, with today's current labor law, as broken as it is, as bad as things can be in the process of getting workers back to work, it would be almost malpractice for a union busting firm not to tell an employer to fire someone because of the chilling effect that it generally has on the body. Can you speak to that a little bit?
Sure. I think you're 100% correct. I think that a lot of the union busting firms, they actually encourage them to break the law. No one's going to admit to it. But the reality is, when workers come together and they exercise power and withhold their labor and do direct action, it circumvents all that. And what we're trying to show workers is, by taking control of the shop floor, by taking control of the workplace, then you don't have to wait on a government agency to come around. And so, yeah, part of the script for the union busters is clearly to delay, delay, delay. Then the tactics of, oh, you terminate someone, try to chill everybody, try to scare everybody. And then what that does is it kicks the can way down the road. And then by the time a resolution comes about by the board or any body that's adjudicating it, everybody's moved on and their lives have gone in a different direction. That is why you've always heard me say, you know, bleep the board. In other words, sorry, move in a different direction. Don't utilize them for the recognition process. The board is very useful in other spaces, but when it comes to seeking recognition or seeking this sort of support from the National Labor Relations Board, they're very slow in pulling the trigger. At the end of the day, if all the workers in a given region walk off the job at Amazon and withhold their labor, I think Amazon would come to the table and figure out how to resolve those issues.
Now, that's a societal issue, you know, and I've been saying this for the longest time. My grandparents' generation, they understood that kind of solidarity. They may not have used the same word, but they understood, you know, the idea of an injury to one being an injury to all. Do you fear that this generation, or especially my generation, being this raised on hyper individualism, doesn't quite mesh with that ideal?
No, I see the youth actually being more responsive to it. I feel the new generation. I think it's actually our generation, the generation just behind us, that's been bad on this subject, Rick. I think it's the newest, the youngest generation that's just come into the workforce is quicker to say, yeah, let's all get together and walk off the job. It's something I'm actually watching firsthand, obviously as an organizer for more than 3 decades. And I think that our generation had it just good enough that they feared risk to a degree that these are things that individuals didn't want to do.
Yeah.
And then they never taught the next generation how, you know, what direct action really was about. And so now that the gap is so wide that you have a new generation that's going, I'm saddled with debt. I've got that. What do I got to lose? At the end of the day, what do they have to lose?
No, you're spot on. You know, I hear it all the time. You know, these kids don't want to work. I'm going, no, they don't want to work for no reward. And, you know, I look at myself. I started in the LTL industry over 35 years ago. And, you know, someone said to me the other day, we're making all this money. I go, yeah, but it's a lot less than I used to make because of stagnant wages and inflation and all the things that have gone on over these last 35 years. I'm actually making standard of living wise a lot less money. And the reward for this generation to put up with the conditions and the breaking down of your body and the hours and not having weekends off, all this stuff, they're like, I'm not doing it. And these companies are having a problem filling these positions, which used to be gold standard working class jobs.
Yeah, and you also have a gap in time where schools and a couple generations, we socially didn't teach these things in the right way. We did not educate, challenge, or mobilize or motivate our peers or our younger peers coming into the workplace. I think I've told you the story before. At 18 years old, when I first started out, a bunch of old guys that are probably younger than I am now, but at the time they appeared to be old, sat me down in the break room and basically threatened me to never walk away from retiree medical, health care, and a retirement plan. That as an 18-year-old coming into the job, I better respect that.
Yep.
You know, and obviously it to this day, all these years later, 35 years later, it sticks into my head.
No, this is why I asked about, you know, society and culturally, because I had the same experience. I had an old timer come, put his arm around me and said, kid, we're going to make a Teamster out of you yet. And it was all of those things. You protect that pension. You don't let them give you a defined contribution, you know, piece of garbage. You protect those health benefits. You protect your working conditions. Because once you crack that door open and they get a little bit of leeway, it's an open season and a flood. And I'm glad that those guys did that.
Isn't it ironic? I don't know if you've seen recently, IBM, for them to try to hold on to workers, is actually going into a defined benefit model again. They were one of the first to try to break away from the defined benefit and realizing for them to hold on to workers long-term in that industry, they've got to actually offer up a defined benefit, not a defined contribution.
Well, and as we started today's show off with Randy, I mean, the reality is the silver tsunami is coming, and that generation, you know, they're not ready. You know, when you've got, you know, what, 1 in 4 who aren't going to be able to retire because they've got literally nothing, that's a problem. When you have the numbers of retirees who are going to have to continue to work until they die, I think we've realized that whole 401k, we're all going to be millionaires thing, didn't happen.
Yeah, well, I think you hit the nail on the head. Our generation, the generation behind us, was convinced on this. You said it a bit earlier, just in a slightly different way. Individualism. You need to understand and you need to manage your own healthcare. You need to manage your own retirement plan. You need to manage your this and you need to manage your own that. Don't you want to be in control of that money? Okay, well, regardless of what we want to do, we realize after 3 or 4 decades of it, that it wasn't a good move, because 80% of people get to, you know, in their 50s or 60s and realize that for some reason there's zero left over in that 401k or whatever accessible savings plan was there. And we were driven into this individualism and away from collective action. And we fell into that trap as a society. And you know what? I think the statistics clearly show that workers really want someone else to take care of this stuff, because think about it, you're taking your kids to school and you're baseball or football, and you know, doctors, and you're trying to work sometimes 2 jobs, you're burning the candle at both ends, and then you got to figure out what an SPD is for your healthcare. You got to figure out, you know, the right investments and where they go in your 401k, and make sure that you, when the stock market tanks, you don't get hammered and you end up with nothing. You know, it's people don't have time to manage those things. And even if they did, the healthcare stuff is hard for me to digest, all of it. And I've been in the industry for 30 years and there's a lot to digest. Yeah. I can't imagine somebody who's, you know, who's working every day and is not in that field all the time.
No, I mean, this is Reaganomics. This is the Reagan vision. You know, the one who dies with the most toys wins. And, well, someone took all our toys. But, Randy, I got a real quick, Wednesday the 24th in Los Angeles, Region 31, the NLR building, NLRB building. What should people do? What do you want folks to do? What do you want them to know? How can we help?
Well, first thing they should do is, obviously, if they're a long way away, try to tune in somehow. We're going to probably have a live feed somewhere. We're still working on some of the logistics of that. Pay attention to it, but really spread the information. And even if, you know, let's say you're in Ohio or Florida or wherever you may be, just talk to a coworker and explain, or a non-union worker, and explain how workers are taking direct action. And workers that have been kind of left to the side by a government agency, it are literally taking it right to their doorstep and saying, hey, here's your responsibility. You need to come up with a decision and you need to do this a little more expeditiously. And I think that just more and more workers talking about it and understanding that direct action has many forms, and that when workers come together and collectively hold either a company or corporation or a government entity accountable. There's good stuff that comes out of it. So I think the best thing is share it, share the discussion. I apologize for not having the link yet. We're still working on how we're going to try to manage a live feed actually there while it's happening. And, you know, at the end of the day, follow it and pay attention to it. That'll be noon to 3 o'clock Pacific Standard Time, which is obviously 3 to 6 Eastern. And everybody else usually knows what time that is whenever you live somewhere else in the country.
There you go, Randy Corgan. Appreciate the time, man. Good talking with you. Good luck on Wednesday. Look forward to hearing more about this.
Thanks for having me, Rick.
Good stuff. Our good friend Randy Corgan, Teamsters Local 1932. Check out their website, teamsters1932.org. I'm sure there will be some information there for the 24th that you can participate along, follow along, maybe even get active. And if you're in the LA area, make sure you find the building. Back after this.
Mad Radio, WMDX, Madison's home for Nightlight with Pete Schwabe.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Partly cloudy overnight, freeze warning with a low in the low 30s. More sunshine than clouds and a high near 50 tomorrow, sunny and around 60 Sunday. A chance of rain into Monday. Increasing clouds, breezy and warmer with a high in the mid-60s. It's 39 right now.
You know Ignite Glass and Gifts' three locations in Madison, but you can also shop igniteglassandgifts.com. You'll find grinders, lighters, collectibles, hand-blown glass water pipes, artistically designed jewelry, and plenty of other items delivered straight to your door or to family and friends. Madison's favorite for glass, gifts, and vape, Ignite Glass and Gifts, Monona Drive, Williamson Street, and Odana Road, plus igniteglassandgifts.com.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
I gotta tell you, it's amazing to me that people stay anywhere near Donald Trump. The fact that the guy is a master con man. A master pitch guy who has, you know, figured out how to fleece his supporters in multiple ways. The most recent one that I've come across that I'm going, wow, I can't believe that anyone's saying this out loud. And I think other people have tried it in the past, but he's right out front, you know, saying, look, you down ballot Republicans, if you want to use my name, if you want my endorsement, you know, some of those campaign funds you're bringing in, I need a cut. You need to kick a little to the chair. I need my vig. Yeah, I got to tell you, I shouldn't be surprised. I should not be surprised, but there you are. And the question is if you're a Republican, is his name worth the percentage? Is it worth the kicking up a bit to the chair there to pay his legal bills? I guess we'll see how much he rakes in over this. And here to share some thoughts on, well, the latest scam and also the trial. Oh, the trial. What fun entertainment there. I've asked our good friend Sarah Burris to come talk with us. Sarah's a reporter over at Raw Story. RawStory.com, the website. Sarah, thanks for taking time for us.
Hey, how the heck are you?
So what do you think? Am I reading too much into this? Fleecing the down ballot folks who, if they got elected, would help him? But am I reading too much into this?
No, I think you're spot on. The thing about elections is I feel like, you know, you have the grassroots and the root stops, and you go up and you go down and you meet in the middle and you get people elected, right? And I think his idea of basically jacking cash from everybody down ballot it's stupid electorally speaking, but it's also just kind of a means
sleazy
for the thing to do. Yeah, it's sketchy. It doesn't surprise me because he is desperate for cash. I mean, if you look at how much money he has on hand versus how much Biden has on hand, he is going to be, I mean, Biden is going to be outspent 2-1 by him, and he's still not going to have, like, Trump still won't have any money because that's how much law, you know, firm money is going out the door.
Yeah. No, just, what you mean is Biden's going to have 2-to-1 spending over Trump.
No, I think Trump is going to end up with like a couple $1 billion that he's raised, but half of it's going to go to his lawyers.
Okay, now I got it. Yeah, or into his pockets.
Well, I don't know. I mean, it may end up going to pay some of his fines. I don't think that we have a ruling on whether or not that is legal, but I would not be surprised if he pushed the envelope on trying to figure out how to do it.
Yeah, I would not be surprised at all. And I got to wonder how the Bible sales are going. Any word on how the Bible sales are going, or the sneakers? You know, they got a little splash on the gold sneakers. I'm not seeing anyone walking down the street with them. Any word on how well the latest Trump products are doing?
Well, if you look at the sneakers, let's put it this way: he started out selling them for $400, and now they're down to $200. So,
still more than I'm ever going to pay for a pair of sneakers, but. That's pretty bad. That's pretty bad jump. But here's the thing. The Truth Social, that as well, took a little tank.
Oh, my God. I didn't check how it closed today. But yesterday, it closed at $28. The highest that it had when the week that it first opened was $79. There is an amount that he has in his contract where if he drops below a certain amount, then he owes, you know, all of his investors a whole bunch of stuff. And there's some sort of math involved in it. And I was told there would be no math. So that's why I don't know the amount.
But, you know, as I was looking at it, you know, one of the commentators I saw on social media said, look, you know, looking at the stock price, you know, going up again a little bit, it ticked up a bit. You know, he said, look, somebody's pumping big money into propping this stock up. And they said, look, this isn't organic, and claimed it's market manipulation. And then if the SEC had any stones, they'd be looking into this heavily. Because, look, this is still a company that they say it was worth on day one, $7 billion and only had $4 million in revenue last year. Revenue, not profit, revenue. Lost enormous amounts of money, but somehow worth $7 billion. That makes no sense.
And then the stock price dropped so dramatically, so quickly, that it's just an embarrassment. And I think really the only opportunity, the only option is to artificially jack up the stock price. But at the same time, if I was, say, Vladimir Putin and I wanted to own Donald Trump, I'd be buying a whole bunch of shares of the company and trying to get as much as I could, because then I could have enough of a controlling stake in Donald Trump that, you know, could be like, well, you know, I could crash this stock.
It's part of me goes, it's so bad that even the Saudis are going, nah, that's too risky for even us.
Right? I mean, that blows my mind too. Jeez. And I mean, they invested in Jared Kushner, man. The dude has never done any kind of like finance company in his life. And he took over his dad's business when he was like 7 years old because his dad went to jail or something like that. And that's it. That's really, he obviously didn't achieve Middle East peace. And $2 billion is what they hand over to him.
Well, maybe he did exactly what he was supposed to do, which was not do anything. You know, look, I look at a lot of things that happen. You look at, you know, the supply side voodoo Reaganomic stuff. They told us if you give rich people all the money, it'll trickle down. That must be broken. No, it worked exactly as it was supposed to. We created more billionaires than we've ever had in history. And the same thing here. Here, this is what it's supposed to do. No, what it was really meant to do is just make Jared Kushner and the Trump family richer. And it did do that.
And I still haven't figured out exactly what the Saudis got other than not being, you know, blamed by the United States for killing a journalist.
Yeah.
Like it really didn't seem like they benefited much from this, but maybe that's still,
we don't know,
out in the open. Yeah.
Do not know. And look, I'm not being conspiratorial, but you know, that administration a little loose with the secrets. Now let's go to trials. Trump, I guess we've got a jury now. Is that right?
So we have a jury and we have one alternate. We need 5 more alternates. We may lose a couple of jurors by the time They're thinking trial will start on Monday, and we may lose a couple of more by then. And the reason for that is that overnight, Trump has been attacking some of the jurors, and not mentioning names, but he and all of his Fox buddies are giving enough identifying information that people who know who that juror is, in one woman's case, like she said that her family and her friends like were blowing up her phone being like, are you the person on this jury? And she said that it was jarring enough for her that she was like, I can't do this. Like if enough people can figure out who I am, then what about people who don't like me, who are going to know that I'm on that jury?
Yeah.
And what are they going to do? And who are they going to tell? So
no, and look, you know,
they let her bail.
No, the sad reality is you look at a network like Fox that has the power of resource and the resources to research every aspect of these individuals' lives and just ruin them. And you know, you've got, you know, the power of someone like Trump who, like you said, you know, out there rage tweeting, and a bunch of, you know, I got to tell you, a bunch of fairly dim folk who wear the red hat, who do listen to dog whistle. I don't know that I would want to serve on that jury.
The thing is, too, is these are anonymous jurors, and it's very rare to have a jury that's an anonymous jury. We're talking mafia cases, and that's really it, right? And so these jurors are supposed to be anonymous, but there's enough identifying information that's being given, like who they work for, what they do, that they're married to somebody who is spraying all kinds of crazy liberal stuff all over Facebook. I mean, there's a ton of identifying information that is being revealed in court. And there have been reporters that are tweeting about it. So then the world finds out who it is, and then everybody at Fox reports on it, and it's like, these people's lives are going to be in danger.
No,
so what happened, you know, toward the end of trial is the judge was like, okay, look, we're not going to talk about the actual place people work, right? I just want to find out what you do for a living, you know, that kind of stuff. And, but still, like what they have done is they gave Trump's lawyers a sheet with everybody's names on it and didn't tell them who everybody is. But then they've got these jury consultants that are like back there Googling all these people's names and finding their photos on Facebook, finding their tweets on Twitter, and matching people up in real time to figure out who they are and be able to ask them questions like, well, you posted this on Facebook 9 years ago. What did you mean by that? You know, and that's really how it's been the whole week. It's been wild.
No, and look, understand. No one is anonymous. There's no such thing anymore in this day and age of anonymous. So, oh, we're going to have an anonymous jury. No, I think the safest place for a lot of these people is wide open in public going, yeah, I'm here. If you see me falling out a window, I didn't do it on purpose.
I heard one of the legal nerds today was saying that it may be the case where the judge has to sequester all of them, because that may be the only way that he can protect them.
No, absolutely. And they should be behind screens.
But if you have these MAGA losers who figure out everything about these people and know where they live, they're still going to show up and harass their families. And that's still really scary and dangerous.
Yeah. I don't know what you do in that situation. And the sad reality is the kind of and look, I look at Trump. He's, you know, he's I don't know if it's to his credit or detriment, but the guy doesn't stop. So the judge isn't going to get him to stop. And I can't imagine this judge is going to have the stones to throw him in jail. I know there have been some commentators who say, I don't know how Trump gets through a trial without going to jail. But I don't see the judge doing that.
So what is blowing my mind is, so they're going to have a hearing on this on Tuesday. And the reason, like if Trump was like throwing a fit in court, they would have that conversation immediately. But because it's happening outside of court, then there's some kind of New York law that says you have to give them a week before you have a hearing about it. So there's going to be a hearing on Tuesday. In between then, we're talking probably 10 examples of Trump breaking the gag order. And what the DA, bless them, has said that they want is $1,000 fine for each instance. And we're all like, seriously? Because Trump can run that cost benefit analysis and be like, okay, well, I've got to have, you know, like maybe 100, maybe 200 opportunities for me to trash somebody and break the gag order. before it really starts to make an impact. Like, that's insane. And so what we have seen over and over again in these trials, especially with the fraud case, is that charging him doesn't work. And so that's one of the reasons some of the legal eagles on TV have just been like, look, he may have a couple of chances before the judge is like, you need to go sit in a cell and think about what you've done, right?
With
so that's why.
And I say you got to give him a cell phone that doesn't, that connects to a fake internet, and let him just rage tweet himself away like he thinks he's able to communicate with people, to see what kind of insanity comes out, but two, doesn't get out. Now, I find it interesting because I saw one of the segments on Fox News. You had Jesse Waters ran a segment, and I guess Trump posted about it, saying that the jury asked to be excused because obviously concerned about her identity. And, with the line saying, she says no one is above the law, and Jesse Waters like, I'm not so sure about her. And you go,
right?
That kind of, I don't know. Are you, I don't know. Or again, reading too much.
No, I think that this is one of those things where they are so far into this cult that they believe that he is the golden calf and he is some sort of, you know, whatever that should not be held to the same standard as the rest of the country. And that's what, I mean, a lot of these jurors who are coming up there, the way that they're responding to questions is a really beautiful thing because they're talking about duty and patriotism and the value of our legal system and why the law is important and following the law is important. And you're just like, yes, these are the people we need, right? And that's who they don't want, because they want someone who is a cultist who's like, no, he needs to be given a free pass for everything.
Yeah, no, dear leader. No, isn't that the concern here, though, that you're going to get one person who's just never going to convict, even if the evidence is overwhelming, simply because of the red hat?
Yeah, that is the fear. And I think, I don't know what happens in that case, because I think, I don't know if the judge steps in and says, I know what you're doing here, and, you know, this is sketchy. I don't know what options the judge has in a case like that, or if it is just going to end up being like, that's it, that's over.
Because I said from the beginning, I don't think he's convicted. Even though I think he's guilty, I don't think he gets convicted. And even though you had Michael Cohen, who pled guilty to a crime of this, that there's already someone who's been convicted of this thing. And I guess the Trump folks are saying that shouldn't be told to the jury. And I don't know how in this day and age you don't already know that as a juror. But any thoughts on it?
So my favorite thing that happened this week is they made some filing on Wednesday that we didn't find out about until Thursday. The judge handed it out to all the press. And it gave examples of how that the Trump people want a disclaimer to be given after Michael Cohen testifies. And it's basically saying, you know, Michael Cohen has done all of these illegal things and he pleaded guilty, but just because he is pleading guilty for doing these things for Donald Trump doesn't mean that Donald Trump is guilty. And the way that they wrote it is just really funny and unbelievable. And then there's the next section is they give the alternative that the DA wants, which I think is still really complimentary. But, you know, that's what they have to say, is just because you have one person who has been convicted does not necessarily mean that the defendant should be considered guilty. And I'm sitting back here going, he went to jail for this guy. Yeah. Come on.
He wrote a book on toilet paper. That should count for something. I did see a funny story. I did see a funny story that someone, I guess one of the dismissed potential jurors, confessed to being struck by Trump's color, saying that he looks less orange.
So there were two people that commented on it. One was this lady who was like, oh, he looks a lot less orange than I thought. More yellow. He looked more yellowy. And that was hilarious. And then probably like an hour later, there was another dude that came out who said, look, I'm a cartoonist and I've satirized this dude for years. There's no way that they're, I mean, I could be impartial, but there's no way they're going to let me on the jury. So I just kind of said, you know, I'm out. Yeah. And he said, what I was really struck by was just how orange he really was. And so it was nice to have these comparisons of people who are just like, wow,
Yeah, no,
I mean, right there.
Crazy, chaotic times. And not just with Trump. Congress, again, I guess we're talking about throwing another speaker out?
Oh, my God. This week has been so crazy because it's just like back and forth between Trump and Congress. And so, yeah, I guess they are trying to figure out how they can throw Mike Johnson out. And there is still a rule in place that says that, you know, it takes one person to be like, I don't like this guy. And the big deal is because he wants to legitimately have a vote on the Israel and Ukraine funding. And the fact that he wants that, you know, the right-wing Republicans are like, no, we can't have that. It's like, why do you not want to vote? Because they're going to lose. You know, everybody else wants this. The majority of America, the majority of Congress wants this to pass. And you as the minority are holding the country hostage.
Yep. Minority of the minority.
The minority of the minority is holding our country, indeed the world, hostage. And it's just embarrassing. And instead they want to have these fights about the border again. It's like, guys, you decided you weren't going to pass that bill. And now you've got Marjorie Taylor Greene, your favorite, who her new idea, she has a new bill that she's going to push out about her solution to the border. I swear to God, this is true, is to have a space laser. I guess to zap people, I'm not really sure. She wants a space laser for the border. And honest to God, I thought it was a joke. I really did think that this was the Onion, and then I found out it was real, and I was like, no way.
So this laser you speak of, would it be the kind like, you know, in the old sci-fi movies where they beam you up? Is it the kind of laser that just, you know, you explode? Is it the kind of laser that just makes you feel kind of uncomfortable and you go, I don't want to do this, I'll turn around? What kind of laser are we talking about?
I mean, that's the thing, right? I have no idea what kind of laser she's talking about. Are we talking about the world's biggest cat toy? Are we, you know, like, is this just a really big magnifying glass that they're going to hold between the Earth and the sun, you know, and just be like, bzz.
Wow.
I don't know. I don't know how that works.
So here's the thing. We've got a speaker who's going to potentially lose his job for doing his job. And we've got a congresswoman who is not going to lose her job because there's just no way they're going to vote her out. Who's talking about a giant cat toy?
Yeah, pretty okay. much. That has been that, and Donald Trump has been this week.
All right. There's the week in the news. Look
All
at that
one.
Simple stuff. Frightening. And look, most powerful nation in the world, wealthiest country in the world. This is what we got. I think George Carlin said it best. Garbage in, garbage out. Sarah, appreciate the time. As always, great stuff.
My pleasure. Have an awesome weekend.
You too. Our good friend Sarah Burris. Make sure you check out her work, rawstory.com. Why not? Let's build a giant cat toy for the border. Because maybe you can get the people to run around in the circle then, and then you could make them disoriented and send them back. Maybe that's it. You're going to make them dizzy, and they're not going to know which way is north. Brilliant. Jeez. Right back. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in Two. On this day in labor history, the year was 1853. That was the day that Harriet Tubman led her first trip on the Underground Railroad, the clandestine network that helped enslaved people escape slavery and move north to freedom. One of the most remembered conductors on the railroad, Tubman herself escaped slavery in eastern Maryland. Tubman had been forced to work in the fields, performing back-breaking labor under a brutal overseer. As a girl, Tubman was injured when she was hit in the head by a weight thrown by an overseer. The injury plagued her with headaches and visions that Tubman attributed as signs from God. To escape these harsh conditions, Tubman had to leave her family behind. But she did not forget them. On her first trip to free those enslaved, the group included her sister and two children. On subsequent trips, she helped lead her brother and aged parents to freedom. In all, Tubman made 19 trips back to the South. She became known as Moses, leading her people out of bondage. These journeys came at a personal risk for Tubman. Enraged Southerners placed a $40,000 bounty on her head. but Tubman was known to say that she never lost a single passenger. The Civil War did not stop Tubman's bravery. She worked as a cook, a nurse, and even a spy for the Union Army. The renowned abolitionist Frederick Douglass wrote a letter for Tubman where he wrote, quote, "The midnight sky and the silent stars have been the witnesses of your devotion to freedom and of your heroism." The horrors of the slave labor system ended in the United States because of the courage of those like Harriet Tubman who risked their lives to stand up against injustice. Like what you hear? Check out more at laborhistoryin2.com. Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Check out our website, thericksmithshow.com. Questions, comments, something on your mind, email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. So you know how President Biden's been talking about junk fees and fairness and trying to hold corporate America a little bit responsible for gouging consumers? You know, capping interest, you know, on late fees and ticket fees and all of these hidden fees that they keep every time you want to buy something, it used to be nickels and dimes. Now it's tens and twenties. And look, give Biden credit. He's going after things that annoy every single consumer and is fleecing us in enormous ways. And you go, well, this should be something that everyone agrees on because, you know, both right, left, center, everyone gets ticked off. You go to order something, you go to, hey, I want these tickets, and only to find out it's double. When you add in the fees and the convenience fees and the service fees and the fees for fees and all of that, you would think bipartisan, nonpartisan. Oh, you would be wrong. Because on Wednesday the 17th, the GOP-controlled House Financial Services Committee, they cast the ballot to advance a piece of legislation that would repeal the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau's rule that puts a cap on credit card late fees from $30 to $41 down to $8. Again, it's amazing. You know, you miss a day, you're a little late, and they nail you. And for a lot of working people, this is kind of a big expense. And it would also ban the adjustment of late fees to inflation. So you go, you know, hey, don't. Now, in the Democratic-controlled Senate, there's another piece of legislation brought forth by Banking, Housing, and Urban Affairs Committee ranking member Tim Scott, Republican from South Carolina, former presidential, maybe still presidential, I'm not sure, was trying to be president for a minute. He and 12 co-sponsor Republicans, they want to undo all of that. Now, it's going to fail in the Senate, but it shows the priorities. And the priority is fleece you and me. Now, what I love is you've got the DOJ and the Federal Trade Commission going after some of the gouging that's going on. And some of this is the app stuff. You know, when you go onto these ticket buying sites, it seems like they're all using the same app because they're all pretty close to the same price. So it seems like price fixing to me. And the DOJ and the FTC, they're looking into this. And it's not just tickets. We now find that in Arizona and Washington, D.C., this company called RealPage and landlords who use their service are being sued because they're saying, look, this is price fixing. You're rent fixing. You're gouging consumers. There's no competition. And yeah, this is part of it. The idea that you have all of this information that's being gathered by this outside entity. And because you think collusion, you know, two people have to agree on something. If you've got this third party who's providing all of this data and stuff and then setting a price and the landlords are going, hey, yeah, that just went up. It seems like collusion to me. It seems problematic, especially for the folks who are paying the rents. And if you wonder why rents have gone up, what, 20% in the last year, I guess is the number that they threw out. This is kind of why. 20% since 2020, I believe it is. And they're blaming this on these app-based companies. We'll see what comes out of it. At some point, we've got to get a handle on this. or we, the consumers, will continue to get fleeced. I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@therickssmithshow.com. Miss any portion of the program, grab the podcast. And as always, thanks so much for being here. We'll see you back here next time.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Email Rick. At rick@therickssmithshow.com.
You're listening to Mad Radio.
WMDX 1580 AM Columbus. W224 EG Madison.
And always streaming on the Civic Media app.